I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Tonight, we are recapping the last couple games for the Kansas Jayhawks as we get ready for the big game of the weekend. And honestly, I think probably one of the biggest games of the entire season to date so far as Kansas travels to Waco to take on Baylor. To help me do all of that tonight, I have, coming back to the podcast for the first time in a little while, it's Scott Chasen. He is from fog.net. Scott, how you doing tonight?
I'm great. I seriously, and I truly mean this, cannot imagine, like, this time for Kansas basketball, the Baylor game coming up, this week off, there has to be so much anticipation toward this game, just the excitement of everything that's going on, that, like, I can't imagine a more Kansas basketball-focused week for a time when Kansas, you know, has 5 days off or 4 days off in between. So I'm actually pumped to be on the podcast just because I think it's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely, I think, the most I've anticipated a game in recent memory. You know, I mean, we've had other games that were fairly similar in the past few years. For example, the Kansas-Oklahoma 1-2 when, you know, Buddy Hield came. But that was obviously a little while ago. I mean, it's been a few years since that. I actually can't think of a game that's been more anticipated from a Kansas standpoint than that particular game. Is there one that comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's been things like the first Kansas-Kentucky in Allen Fieldhouse, the number one versus number one Kansas-Oklahoma. But again, and I went back and forth with this with someone on Twitter that, you know, a lot of those games, like, at the time, it was like, oh, it's such a big deal. And then Kansas wins the Big 12 by three games. And it's like, oh, well, turns out they could have lost that game. I think the Texas Tech game 2 years ago, I don't 100% remember, but I'm pretty sure Kansas won the league by two games, meaning they actually still could have lost that game and won the Big 12, not only shared it, but won it outright. So, I, you know, a lot of times it doesn't live up to the luster. And look, Baylor's still got some tough games left after this. They could certainly lose again, but this one feels like if Kansas wants a share of the Big 12 title, certainly you put yourself in a tremendous position to go get that done. By, you know, coming away with a win on Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, that would have been a fetch over on the Rock Chalk Talk account because I was watching that conversation. Was wondering if that was going to be a topic when I was originally planning on talking to Fetch tonight. But so this particular game, kind of like you're talking about, like I think it's kind of more than even that. Like this could potentially be the game that determines who's the overall number one versus the overall number two. Like unless one of these teams completely falls off, which I just don't see happening, these are probably going to be the one and two in the entire tournament, you know, coming up. So, I mean, this probably has the biggest implications of any particular game that I can remember in a really long time.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, speaking on the NCAA tournament, I mean, there is kind of this unfortunate scenario that's brewing for one of these four teams that are right now in line to get one seed, and that's San Diego State, Gonzaga, and then the two from the Big 12, Baylor and Kansas, wherein that both San Diego State and Gonzaga get on the number one seed line, and then someone's going to New York City who does not want to be going to New York City. Now, I think right now that'd probably be maybe San Diego State, but if San Diego State's undefeated, maybe jumps ahead of KU because KU loses a couple more games or loses to Baylor once or something like that, now all of a sudden you're not in Indianapolis, which it's still a bit of a drive. I think it's about maybe 7 hours from Lawrence, maybe a little less from Kansas City. There's a difference between, okay, it's Selection Sunday, now go fly yourself to New York. That's a really expensive flight for a lot of fans, and obviously there are fans in New York, but you know, there's a big difference in or I guess that would be the Sweet 16, Elite Eight anyway. So it wouldn't be immediate, but still it'd be a lot more expensive for a lot of people. And I wonder, you know, what KU's representation would be. The other worry about getting into that New York region is undoubtedly that's where Duke would want to go if Duke were a number two seed. So you would obviously like to avoid the Blue Devils too. So I think it's a big deal for Kansas to be able to get into Indianapolis, like you talked about, for that kind of Midwest regional. So for all those reasons, I mean, yeah, you're right. It's a big deal for NCAA tournament stuff too.
Yeah, I also, though, don't know that unless San Diego State was the number two overall, like, unless Kansas loses, like, two or three more and doesn't win the Big 12 tournament, like, I can't see them getting shipped over to the East. Like, even if San Diego State is, like, the third number one over Kansas, like, they're already, like, San Diego State is already going to be shipped really far away from home. I don't know that going to Indianapolis versus New York makes that much of a difference for them. And so I have a hard time imagining the committee is going to displace two teams out of their natural region when they can just displace the one.
Yeah, here's what I'm worrying about, though. The committee is not going to care about that. And the committee will send you 20 hours away to send another team 5 miles closer, even if it doesn't make that much of a difference to the 5 mile closer team, because they're the higher seed. And, you know, some have made the argument that, hey, maybe it's easier to fly from San Diego to New York. I'm not sure either way. I mean, you're talking about three time zones there. I have no idea what Indiana is, so don't quiz me on that. But I will say this. I don't like you talked about, I don't anticipate Kansas falling below the number two overall number one seed, but if they lose to Baylor, they lose at Texas Tech, they lose to Baylor again in the Big 12 tournament, all of which, if those results play out in order, they may be underdogs in all three games. They'll probably be favored slightly in the Texas Tech game. But if they've lost those two games, certainly they'll be underdogs to Baylor the third time. Then I actually think you end into a pretty plausible scenario where Kansas is still going to be a one seed, but an undefeated San Diego State team might make an edge, even though I think we'd all agree that Kansas schedule has been like impossible, so having a few losses shouldn't really be that much of a black mark.
Yeah, I also have a feeling, though, that if Kansas makes it to the one line, I think there's a very good argument to be made that they're going to get slotted in above a team like San Diego State regardless. Like, if they do enough to be a number one, I would not be surprised to say that San Diego State gets bumped down to be the fourth number one just because of the fact that their schedule is so much worse than any of the other number ones, even Gonzaga at this point. So, I don't know that I'm necessarily too worried about it. Like, I honestly, though, at that point, if it comes down to being the number one in the East or being a number two in Indianapolis, yeah, I would definitely rather have the number two in Indianapolis. So, I also don't think, even if Kansas loses this game against Baylor, that it's very likely that they would go ahead and lose at Texas Tech and then also lose to Baylor in the Big 12 championship tournament there. Like, I have a feeling that all three of those don't happen. The question, of course, then becomes, which one is it that they actually are able to avoid? If they can beat Texas Tech on the road in the finale and they have three losses to Baylor, it's very clearly they will slot behind Baylor. But Baylor being the clear-cut overall number one seed at that point, I don't know that necessarily hurts Kansas too much comparatively to the other two. So
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that.
All right, so before we get ahead of ourselves and start talking specifically about the Baylor game, let's take a look back at the Oklahoma game and the Iowa State game. I don't know that there's a lot to take from each game individually, but let's start by, what's the one big storyline or one big performance that you take out of that Oklahoma game that you think is informative moving forward?
It's funny because the easy answer would be like, oh, Marcus Garrett hit a bunch of threes. He had six of them, 24 points, seven assists, an offensive eruption. And yet I wrote about this. I came away more impressed with Marcus Garrett's defense because, I mean, look, he's not going to hit six threes in every game. You want him taking those 3-point shots. But, if he could just be a 33% 3-point shooter, then that's terrific. He was at 36% after that game. Might have dropped back down a little bit. I think he went 0-for-2 against Iowa State. But defensively, just how he takes over games. And then Lon Kruger at one point just had Brady Manick go sit in the corner, basically, and not involve him in any ball screens so that Marcus Garrett wouldn't switch on anyone with the ball and knock it away. And, I talked to Marcus Garrett after the game. And he said something to the effect of, like, yeah, I felt like I wasn't even playing defense in the second half because they weren't even, you know, bringing the ball my direction. So that was, to me, the number one thing that stood out from that game against Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, I actually have to agree with you that, like, obviously the points were nice from Garrett. And, like, the only thing in terms of his offense that it really shows you is that this team needs to be taking more threes than they have been. You know, you're going to have nights like that. And Marcus Garrett's been left so wide open from three that he needs to be taking them, even if he doesn't make them at nearly that clip. You know, I have a hard time imagining with him continuing to get open threes, he's going to be able to, or he's going to shoot any less than like 30%. And even being a 30% three-point shooter at this point adds an element to his game that requires people to, you know, respect his offensive prowess at that point. So even if he's not hitting them, it opens things up for everyone else, and then he can start making more passes. But I was actually more impressed by his assists. You know, he had 7 assists on this game. He was passing the ball really well. And like you said, that defense. That I counted at least 3 times in that game where he was guarding a guy straight up and just took the ball away from him. Not even like, you know, deflected a pass or anything like that. Literally just defending a guy straight up, took the ball away from him, and then went the other way with it. And that kind of defense you don't see very often. It's been absolutely phenomenal. And it's, I mean, it's hard to say that he is not the best defender overall in the Big 12. You know, I've seen a lot of people talk about Udoka, and I think his defense is a different kind of defense. But if you're talking about just straight up ball defender, Marcus Garrett, I think, is by far the best defender in not only the Big 12, but probably the best defender in the nation.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I find it hard to believe there's a more impactful defender. Now, I will say, to Udoka Azubuike's point, and this is why I consider him to be the most valuable player at Kansas, which was a question that someone put out a poll on recently. It might have been Jesse Newell. It's the idea that if Kansas didn't have Udoka Azubuike, and this is not a slam on David McCormick by any means. I think David McCormick in year 3 will turn into a really nice player. But the difference between Udoka Azubuike in the game and Udoka Azubuike not in the game, I mean, the drop-off is just, it's gigantic, especially, you know, rim protection. There was a stretch like midway through the year where Christian Brown had as many blocks as David McCormick. He's not a shot blocker. He can be a good defensive rebounder, but a lot of the times, you know, I think the last game he had 2 defensive rebounds in something like 15 or 18 minutes where, again, you know, he's really not doing enough on that end. And then obviously you don't have the efficient scoring punch because David McCormick's game is like watching, you know, NBA on NBC highlights from like whatever generation that was in where, you know, you see big men shoot 14 footers over 2 guys. And, you know, if they're going in, great, but that's never really that quality of look, at least unless it's unguarded. So I think for that reason, there's a big difference. But if you just want to talk technical defender, who can they guard? How can they take them out of the game? I mean, look at just go back and look through the game log, you know, from his time and see the number of guys he's been matched up against who have had like career worst games against him or abnormal turnover totals against him. And I just think what he does is I think it's ridiculous how good a defender he has become. He's gotten better from last year, and I think it is really elevated KU's wing defense just because Devon Dotson is a good individual defender. I feel bad for Ochai Agbaji because I think Ochai is a great defender who is the 4th best defender on his team. And I think on other teams, he would get a lot of love for how great he can be defensively. But on this team, he's just, you know, he's just another guy basically out there. So I think it's all part of it. I think you got to have a lot of good defenders. But yeah, Marcus Garrett's really impressed me this year in that regard.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny because all of those points you just made are things that we've been talking about over the last 3 or 4 weeks here on the podcast because, you know, Agbaji, you know, just comparatively, yes, he's not having as good of a season as I think a lot of people thought he could have based off of, you know, that first or that second half of his freshman season and just kind of what you think would be a natural progression. But he hasn't really been a slouch by any means. He's been a very solid player. But like you said, there's just other guys that are kind of outshining him at every single thing he does in a way that we've never seen before. You know, and yes, it was Jesse that had put out that poll. And we, of course, over here at Rock Chalk Talk, were laughing about that because we had gotten into a big debate about which guy was, you know, the most valuable for this team a few days prior to that. So it was nice to see somebody kind of put that out there and see what the general fan base seems to think. But, you know, it's really easy to make an argument for any three of those options for Dotson, Garrett, or Azubuike. DJ Moore actually put out an article on The Athletic talking about Udoka Azubuike, kind of doing a full deep dive into his, you know, into the way that he plays and kind of looking at his game and like you were saying, kind of the, you know, plus minus or like looking at how people are or how the team is when Azubuike is on the floor and when he's off the floor. And I mean, there's so much great information. There's so many different, you know, storylines you can take out of this team. And honestly, I think there's a lot of guys that are very underrated nationally because you have a super awesome defensive team here. So it's hard to kind of really focus in on any of the individual guys and kind of give them their due. The other thing that I think, you know, is that a lot of people still don't give defense its due nationally. We are seeing across all of college basketball a lot better defensive teams than we typically see, which I think has something to do with the fact that offense is down. You know, it's a little bit of a chicken and egg scenario of, you know, do the defenses look so much better because offenses just aren't that great this year, or the offense is looking worse because we have so many good defensive teams this year. And I think it's a little bit of both, but what we're seeing, you know, we're not used to seeing, especially a Kansas team that is so good on defense and isn't quite as good on offense as they typically are. And a lot of people, I just don't think are prepared to really talk about it. So,
I agree with you there. Real quick. I'll just throw in that I think 1-4, like defenders wise, this is probably one of the best teams in the history of college basketball defensively. I know KenPom has had it. I don't know if they still do as the number one defense, like going back to, you know, however long those logs are. I think it's like back to 2001. But I mean, just think of that top four, you know, Marcus Garrett, Doak, Devon, and then Ochai, who, again, like I said, I think at least a great defender. I mean, that's
ridiculous. It's actually kind of like, funny because they were the overall number one in the entire KenPom era until just this last game for West Virginia against Oklahoma State. West Virginia is now a better ranked defense than Kansas by 0.3 on the adjusted defensive efficiency. So, but I think that kind of goes to my point that the defenses this year are a whole lot better than they typically are. I realize that some of that is probably the offenses not being as good, but, you know, this whole adjusted defensive efficiency number is supposed to take into account the quality of the teams that you're facing so that you can make those comparisons across different eras. And I think we're by far seeing the defenses are just a lot better this year than they have been in years past.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to go ahead. I don't think there's really much more to talk about with that Oklahoma game. That doesn't also come up in the next game against Iowa State. Kind of turning to Iowa State real quick. You know, obviously, I think the big story of that game was just that both teams were going crazy from three. At one point, Iowa State, I believe, was like 9 of 11 or something ridiculous like that. And then they cooled off, you know, to kind of finish off the game. But, you know, except for that crazy three-point shooting, what was like the main storyline that you took out of that particular game?
Well, I'm going to cheat because my answer in part involves three-point shooting, but I would say the health of Devon Dotson. And, you know, I talked to him just after the game, and I asked his shooting numbers. I'll paint the picture first. His shooting numbers dropped off. Everyone knows this, but it coincided with his injury. So he gets the hit pointer against Baylor. He shoots 1 of 4 in that game. The next two games, he shoots 1 of 4. Over his next four games, he's a 20% three-point shooter. And then over the next three games after that, which includes the TCU game where he tweaked his knee, he is an 11.1% three-point shooter. So you see, again, those numbers dip from whatever it was to start to 25% to 20% and then 11% after that knee injury. And what you saw was Devon Dotson with burst. You saw him go down the court, get fouled by two different people and convert the and one. He kissed his bicep afterward, and you saw him hit threes. So after the game, I went up to him and I basically said, you know, how much of that shooting is tied to your health? How do you feel right now? And he said, I'm about 100%, meaning not quite there, but about to get there. And look, Kansas has four days off this week. So I think, you know, Bill Self said today or said on Wednesday on his coach's show that it's unfair to say, well, hey, Kansas lost to Baylor that last meeting because Devon Dotson was injured because, you know, you still have to play, whatever. I get why Bill Self says that. He's not a big excuses guy. But when you remember that Marcus Garrett had like two ankle injuries and Devon Dotson injured his hip in the first half and missed most of the second half, let alone, you know, was clearly hindered for the rest of the game. He missed the next game entirely. I think that tells you a lot about maybe those teams in that last meeting and how they'll look moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. I was actually going to go ahead and bring that up for the Baylor game when we get there, but talking specifically about this Iowa State game, like what really I think stood out to me from that game is also kind of related to the whole three-point shooting. But it's just that this was yet another way that Kansas has shown that they can absorb the best shot of whoever it is they're facing and still find a way to put together a very good game. You know, obviously when they're not dealing with really big injuries. You know, I mean, because, you know, that's kind of the thing. With the exception of the Duke game to start the year, the other, you know, the losses that they have been really directly related to significant injuries that they've had in those games. You know, Devon Dotson, obviously Baylor, like you were talking about, but also, you know, that game against Villanova that they lost by a single point because Marcus Garrett injured one of his ankles, you know. And so what we have seen, though, is that when they are fully healthy or when they're even mostly healthy, they are able mm-hmm. to absorb whatever kind of game that they're getting from their opponent and find a way to go ahead and actually win that game. You know, this one, they had to shoot phenomenally from three. You know, there was that one point that, like I was talking about earlier, where Iowa State was like 9 of 12 from three-point range, and they were still losing. Or actually, I think it was even worse than that. I think they were shooting like 82% from three, and they were down by double digits, you know, in the first half, which is just an insane stat to think about. You know, but they have shown the ability to play a bunch of different styles, to have a bunch of different people kind of take over and still be able to come out with a very, very strong performance. Kind of to your point where you're talking about Abaji, you know, kind of not actually underwhelming, but just kind of getting lost because of, you know, the huge efforts of other people. You know, he was 4 of 4 from two in this game. He was 2 of 6 from three, so he was shooting 33%. You know, he scored 14 points, and it was a very, very quiet night for him. You know, he played 30 minutes, played really good defense all night long. But you didn't really notice what he did because a guy like Devon Dotson was going off. And, you know, in prior games, it's been someone else going off. There hasn't been a game this year where Abaji is the guy to take over. And yet we have seen that he has that capability to do it. He did it several times for us last year. And so it's just a matter of, is he going to get that opportunity? Are they going to need him to do it? But I think that's the biggest storyline to kind of take to this point so far this year, is that you legitimately have 5 or 6 guys that could potentially take a game over by themselves and, you know, really kind of lift the offense to where it needs to be.
Yeah, for sure. And hey, you mentioned, you know, injuries costing them in games. I mean, Isaiah Moss doesn't play in that Duke game, and obviously the turnovers.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that one.
Yeah, I thought the turnovers were always a little bit of an anomaly. It hasn't really been a problem for KU this year. And like you mentioned, injuries and the losses, and then like the Villanova game in particular, KU leads by 4 with the ball with 2 minutes to go. And I think that's when Devon Dotson had the turnover and then didn't foul and gave up the layup, and also came off his man for some reason and gave up the go-ahead three. And so there were a lot of, like, extenuating factors in that game that, I mean, obviously haven't been repeated because KU has one loss since, and it's when it had 2 guys injured. So, I'm kind of completely with you on that point. The only other thing I would add from that game was Christian Brown, just again, he hasn't necessarily been the most consistent, which you, of course, wouldn't really expect for a freshman, but one thing that I think has been consistent is when he gets open threes, particularly off the bounce, he is not afraid to take them, and he is by far the best at it on this team. We have a film room up on our site right now at 24/7 Sports, but that he's like literally leading the nation in percentage on off the dribble three-pointers, because it's like something comical, because he's taken like 15 of them and made like 11 or something like that. So that's
awesome.
A skill he very – That's a skill he very clearly has. And so I just for him to be able to do that, for him to be able to bring that, he scored all his points in the first half. It wasn't, you know, by any means a transformational performance or anything like that. But again, you know, he's the guy you're going to need in March. You're going to need, you know, Christian Brown to have one of those games, or Isaiah Moss, I think one of the two generally, you know, just to advance in the NCAA tournament and whatnot. So, oh, and I got the number. It's actually 8 of 11. So I oversold a little bit, but basically, I mean, 8 of 11 on moving threes is pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's absolutely insane. All right, so I do want to go ahead and turn to the Baylor game because it is about that time. But first, I need to throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on Rock Chalk Podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
And we're back. Okay, so here talking with Scott Chasen from Fog.net, 24/7 Sports. Obviously, the big topic of the weekend now is this Kansas and Baylor game. We kind of talked about the implications nationwide and all of that at the beginning, but so now I want to kind of drill down into this particular game itself. At the time that we're recording, it's kind of assumed that Missy Oteague for Baylor is going to be able to play in that game, but I don't think I've heard anything official. Kind of looking at the game coming up, do you think that that's probably one of the biggest kind of unknowns that might, you know, be a big factor in this game? Or are you not thinking that it's going to be that much of a difference either way?
Yeah, you know, I think he had a really nice game the first time these two teams played. He's a good rebounder, and he provides a scoring punch for them. I think he's their second leading scorer and maybe their second or third leading rebounder. So, you know, look, missing him is if he does miss the game, like you said, we don't know at this point, is obviously going to be a loss. But I've watched, just because of when Baylor has played, I've been able to see most of their last two games. And quite frankly, I think it's one of those deals where the Baylor offense, how it moves, and especially the defense, is so much of a well-oiled machine that it has a lot of interchangeable parts, a lot of veterans, a lot of guys who have redshirted. I know that's a huge talking point with them. And that, it's not necessarily like if you have Jared Butler and a bunch of other guys, you're going to have a lot of guys who are capable of making plays. And, you know, I think I tweeted this, but they played West Virginia and it was like an 11-point game, but they led that game by 20 plus with like a couple minutes to go. And West Virginia just got some garbage time buckets to make it closer. And I felt the same way about the Oklahoma game. Like Oklahoma had a spurt where they cut like a 15-point deficit, maybe down to a couple. And from there, it stayed kind of close. But, you know, you take away that two-minute stretch of game time and now, you know, add 15 more onto what Baylor did. And, you know, now you're talking about a 26-point margin. So I've been really impressed by Baylor. Bill Self said today that, or on Wednesday, that he thinks Baylor is the best team Kansas has ever gone up against at the current date. Not saying they'll be the best by the end of the year, in the Big 12, that is. So he's saying on, you know, February, whatever, this is the best Big 12 team that Kansas has faced. So I think there's a lot to like with them, and I don't think it's tied to any individual player, probably outside of Jared Butler.
Yeah, I mean, I watched that game that they've had against Oklahoma, kind of hoping, you know, that Oklahoma would put up a little bit more of a fight. And while Oklahoma was able to stay in it at the beginning of the game, like, you know, it was pretty clear that even without Monte Oteague, you know, they were just outclassing Oklahoma in a lot of different ways. Which I think kind of leads to, you know, I've actually said I'm having a hard time seeing how either Kansas or Baylor loses to anybody outside of each other. You know, this year they just seem to be far and away the two best teams in the league. Baylor's had a lot of close calls, especially on the road. But you know, they've yet to actually drop one at this point. So I'm definitely curious to see whether that's going to happen. Obviously, that's going to have no effect on the actual game that we have. But, you know, if you're looking at this game, you know, I don't know that we can take too much from the last game that we had because of Devon Dotson, you know, being out for the large majority of it. But when you're looking at this game, which matchups do you think are going to be especially important? I mean, I think there's some fairly obvious ones like Hirokazu Buke inside against whoever, but – I'd be curious to see who you think is going to be the most important matchup in this game.
No, that's honestly exactly where I was going. And, you know, the last time these two teams played, Baylor employed a really interesting defense that, you know, they've been playing a lot more man-to-man. I know everyone talks about that. But what they did against Udoka Azubuike, they fronted the post, so they had a guy between him and the ball, or in between the ball and Azubuike at all times. And then they had another player just running that back, I guess it'd be the baseline, just kind of like a free safety to knock the ball away. And it kind of exposed that this Kansas team is, you know, if you want to have a weakness, and I think this is why people talk about turnovers, is I think that weakness would be its passing. I don't think this is a very good passing Kansas team. I think, you know, this isn't a slight on Devon Dotson because he's great. He could legitimately be National Player of the Year. He's going to be a first-team All-American. But he's probably the worst passing point guard Kansas has had in a long time, which, again, you know, it's he does a lot of other things really well, but that's an area he doesn't do, you know, great in. Ochai Agbaji is probably a bad to terrible box thrower, and Marcus Garrett at times can be good at it, but you're relying on Marcus Garrett to do just about everything at this point, so you probably don't want him being your point guard and play initiator too. So I think Kansas has made some strides in getting the ball to Udoka Azubuike since that first meeting, but you know, I'm very curious to see what Bill Self kind of schemes up as the answer, because it very clearly bothered KU in that last meeting. So I think the biggest matchup is, you know, Kansas might have the most valuable player in college basketball. Can that player get off more than 6 shot attempts in the game like he did? You know, he got off 6 in that first meeting against Baylor.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely going to be a big thing for them to try to kind of deny the post there. But I think even over the course of the season since that game, you know, that Kansas has gotten a lot better about feeding the post, have gotten a lot better at the passing. Like, I think overall their passing game over the course of the season hasn't been that great, but I've definitely noticed an improvement in the last 3-4 weeks. And so like, I don't know that it's how much of that has to do with opponent. You know, there's been, hasn't been really been able to deny that, or how much of it has been this team really kind of buying into it and getting a whole lot better. I think guys like Christian Brown have gotten better at passing. You know, I think Garrett has gotten a lot better at passing, and he already was pretty good to start. Devon Dotson, I think, is making smarter passes. Not that he's, you know, performing a whole lot better in terms of, like, he wasn't, you know, making good passes before, but he's gotten a lot better about deciding when he needs to pass it, when he should drive, and really kind of opening things up. So I definitely agree. If you'd asked me about 5 weeks ago, you know, is passing kind of a big deficiency for this team, I definitely would have said that. I don't know that it's so much of a weakness now. It's not like a super really good strength of theirs, but I think they are at least better than average at it now, whereas before I would have said they were pretty well below average. I think the big thing for me – go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, to your point, I definitely think they've made strides in passing. You know, I'm just more looking at comparing them to the elite teams in the nation. And you're right. You know, your point about Devon Dotson, he's definitely had some games. Now, he had the kind of suspicious one at TCU with the career high in assists. This may just be a me thing, but if you look, guys at TCU always have crazy assist numbers, and I'm pretty sure that's related to their scorekeeper, who counts just about everything as an assist if you go back, like, historically and look at TCU's, like, logs. Or Jamie Dixon is just the best coach ever at coaching assists. So one or the other there. But I do agree that there have been some strides made. I just still think the biggest thing is that very specific post-entry, throw it to the corner of the backboard pass. And I think this KU team really struggles at that. And, like, you know, the guy who threw them last year was Quentin Grimes. That was the pass that every – no, I shouldn't say every, but 70-plus percent of post-entry passes came from him, just because – you know, Dotson was not capable of making that pass. I think he's trying it a little bit more now, but I still think Christian Brown, like you said, is another good name there. But I think in this game, KU's post passing will have to be probably the best it's been all year, just to get Azubuike involved.
Well, I'm also wondering, though, how much of that has become different, because they're not doing as much in terms of entry passes, you know, so from the perimeter into the post. Instead, what they're doing now is working the ball around enough so that they can drive inside. And then when it's interior passing, they're definitely a whole lot better at that, I think, in terms of dumping it off at that point. And I think that's kind of how they've combated it. And maybe that's why I'm not noticing it as much anymore. because they're not doing nearly as much of that where they are, you know, from the top of the key, trying to pass it into Udoka. They are having him come out in screening and like rolling it to him so that he can get a little bit of a you know, head of steam going to the basket, or driving in. And then when people come to him, to whoever's driving, dumping it off to Doak at that point. So it may not even be that they've even gotten any better at it. They're just finding ways to not rely on it as much. And I think that they are able to kind of take advantage of that against Baylor, especially if Masio Teague, you know, isn't there, because I think he's one of the guys that was so good last time at kind of preventing the guards from getting the drives that they wanted to. And so if he's back, that will help a little bit, but if he's not 100%, but also I think that decision-making by Dotson and Garrett in some cases has gotten better to allow them to get a little bit of a quicker step to find some angles that they weren't finding earlier in the year. Now, I'm definitely still worried about this game. Obviously it's at Baylor, you know, Baylor is a phenomenal team. And so you kind of definitely have to be worried about that at that point. But, you know, if we're not talking about the inside, what about the matchups of the guards? Are you like the defensive pressure that Kansas can get? Are you thinking that that's going to get to Baylor at all? Or is Baylor kind of shown that they can handle that kind of defensive pressure?
I think Baylor has shown that it can handle a lot of things, although, again, kind of suspiciously, you watch their games, and I'm not going to say they don't put anyone away, but it's like they'll be up by 15 with a couple minutes left and just, you know, go like super cold and win by four or something. And I think that's why a lot of the advanced metrics don't like them as much, is because their margin of victory. And like, I went and watched the Texas game they were playing. I think it was at Texas. And again, that was one where they're, you know, in control, absolutely dominating. It might've been 20 or something. And then you look up and, hey, there's only a minute left and it's an 8-point game or whatever. So Texas isn't going to come back, but you're just like, how have you not put it away? And so I think at times they can be susceptible to teams that get really aggressive and pressure. But I'm also just impressed with, you know, kind of the heady plays, hockey assists, you know, pass to pass, screen the screener, those types of things that they've been able to do. I'm most interested in the Kansas side to see how Devon Dotson comes out, because he didn't say this, but just talking to him after the last game, you really got the indication that there's a little bit of fire there, that, you know, like, these guys didn't get my best shot. These guys beat me, which is something he does not like. I know no one likes to lose, but I think he especially hates to lose. And so I expect Devon Dotson to come out with a lot of fire for the game in Waco.
Yeah, definitely. So one other thing, or actually, I guess there's two other main areas that I'm kind of curious about, because it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And then two, that a second one I think is going to go a long way towards determining who actually wins this game. But the first one being offensive rebounding. It's not something that Kansas has been particularly good at stopping. But for whatever reason, Baylor is a really good offensive rebounding team when they're on offense. But they are an absolutely atrocious team in terms of giving up offensive rebounds to their opponents. They rank 236 in KenPom, you know, out of 320 something. They're giving up 29.2% of their, you know, of the opponent's attempts for offensive rebounds. And they are also rebounding 36.5% of their misses. So kind of that, you know, typically, like, the way that I've always thought about offensive rebounding is that it's mainly effort. Whereas defensive rebounding, you know, it obviously requires a lot of effort, but a lot of that could potentially be positioning as well. It just seems strange that they're going to be so, you know, aggressive on the offensive end and yet so almost lackadaisical on the defensive end. Is there anything particular that you've seen from them that would explain that, or is it kind of just one of those weird statistical things?
Yeah, I haven't for sure seen anything from the Baylor side, but I'll tell you from the Kansas side, I would say effort is a part of it. I definitely would not discount that, but I actually think the biggest factor in Kansas's offensive rebounding is Bill Self's strategy with offensive rebounding, whether he is allowing three guys to crash the offensive glass or two guys to crash the offensive glass. I think that makes a huge difference. And obviously, you know, the downside to that is you get beat by a team that, you know, runs down the court in transition. I mean, how many games, maybe not this year, but in past years, especially when Key went small, were they just getting absolutely blitzed in transition? And you're like, you know, what's happening? Well, they're sending three guys at the offensive glass and the other team is getting the rebound and going down the court. So I think that's probably a factor from them. And again, I really don't know about Baylor. So, I couldn't tell you in that regard, but Kansas had 6 offensive rebounds in that last meeting that were recorded by players who will actually play in the game. So Silvio had 3 offensive rebounds, and whatever he played is like 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes. They'll need a lot more than that, I think, in Waco.
Yeah. So the other thing that kind of jumped out to me looking at their statistical profiles is that Baylor, has issues in terms of 2% shooting. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they are either the worst or really close to the worst in terms of getting blocked on offense. They are number 352 at getting 13.1% of their shots blocked. I don't think it helps that they're going up against a guy in Udoka who is really good at blocking. They have several guys. Kansas has several guys who can block shots from kind of the guard position. And McCormick is a very active shot blocker as well. Do you think that that's going to be one of the keys to the game, is that, they're going to have to get something going from inside and avoid getting blocked?
Yeah, look, I think the reason why, you talked about Kansas winning any which way, the reason why Kansas can withstand three-point barrages is because KU has a great two-point defense and KU has a great two-point offense. So if the threes are anywhere in the vicinity, Kansas is likely going to have the advantage. I would say the biggest thing for them, because they didn't shoot a crazy good percentage on two-point jumpers in the last meeting, although they were hovering right around 50%, Baylor only had 5 turnovers. And I think part of that is because Devon Dotson goes out, so you can't pressure the same way with everyone doing more. But, whether it's blocks, steals, or, whatever, just missed two-point field goals in tight, I think that's a huge area for emphasis, too. Especially because Baylor can make threes. They made 8 in the last meeting, and they shot 40% or whatever. So, certainly that's an aspect of their game they have. But on the other side, I don't think threes alone beats this Kansas team because of what I mentioned. If Kansas is going to lose to a team that hits a lot of threes, it's going to be because they also didn't turn the ball over a ton and found a way to convert twos, because Kansas has like a baseline for scoring. It's also why Kansas's efficiency numbers on offense are like top 20 in the nation.
Yeah, definitely. All right. I'm not going to ask you for an actual prediction for this game. We are going to have a preview with someone that covers Baylor specifically, and I'll give my prediction there.
Get the Baylor Bear.
What?
Get the Baylor Bear to come on. He would be great.
Oh, man, I would love to be able to do that. Unfortunately, I don't have a way to contact him directly. But there was one more thing I wanted to ask you about. And this is kind of a weird off the wall thing, but I actually got into a discussion with you over on Twitter in relation to Joshua Briscoe, from 810 in Kansas City, had debuted his pet math algorithm, is I guess the best way to describe it. And you had your own kind of thoughts on how many pets are acceptable, and I just when you gave me your formula that had something to do with the number of feet and the number of tails and whiskers, I was a little confused about how you came up with those numbers and how it actually works.
Yeah, so it doesn't work because I forgot that animals can have 0 whiskers, and you can't, if you multiply something by 0, it's going to throw all the numbers off. Basically, I was just trying to say it's acceptable to have up to 3 dogs and 0 cats. So that was the entire basis for me creating that formula.
So it was all about saying that cats are horrible and that nobody should ever have cats?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. When people talk about their cats, the nicest thing they can say about them is, wow, he's just like a dog, or she's just like a dog. So that tells you everything you need to know.
I will just go ahead and leave it there. Well, Scott, where can people find all your work online?
You can check it out on Twitter. I usually tweet everything out at Chase and Scott, and on the site kansas.247sports.com or fox.net, whichever you prefer.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me, and thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million apps that are out there. You can subscribe to us there to get every episode as soon as it comes out. You can always contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, anything like that. So thanks again, Scott, for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.